Du lytter til Hestedølærerne. Podcasten for dig, der er dølæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Emma Thomsen. Jeg er dølæge og arbejder som konsulent for Børinger Ingelheim. I Hestedølærerne taler vi om tilstanden og sygdommen, der kan ramme heste, men vi tager også andre emner op, som er relevante for dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Denne podcast er lavet af Børinger Ingelheim, og med denne podcast ønsker vi at give noget tilbage til dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Vi ønsker at tage emner op, som er interessante og relevante for dig, og hvis du har forslag til emner, du gerne vil høre mere om, eller tips til en gæst, du gerne vil høre, så tøv ikke med at kontakte os. Mine kontaktoplysninger finder du i podcastens beskrivelse.
Today we have a special guest with us from Finland. It's Katja Hautala from the University of Helsinki. Welcome to the podcast, Katja.
Thank you very much.
Could you start by telling us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I've been doing a lot of things in the veterinary field, but always been interested in infectious diseases and in parasite control. I'm working in University of Helsinki. I got my PhD on equine parasitology and anthelmintic resistance and epidemiology of gastrointestinal parasites. I have a specialization on infectious animal diseases, and also in addition to parasitology research, I'm doing research on equine parapox virus at the university. I also do equine practice and quite a lot of other things as well, but this is briefly what I'm doing.
Great. Today we're going to talk about this parapox virus, and I'm going to hand over the microphone to my colleague Louise, who's going to steer the conversation. So go ahead and start, Louise.
Thank you very much, Maria. So today we invited Katja because of her expertise in this particular field, because there are lots of diseases that float around in the Nordic countries. And I think learning a lot from each other in that respect could be very interesting. So the reason we invited Katja was because of this particular epidemiological spread they had of parapox virus amongst the horses in Finland. And we want to hear today about the risk of us seeing this in other countries in Scandinavia. So Katja, could you start off by telling us a little bit about what parapox virus actually is and which animal species we usually recognize this virus in?
Well, we have parapox viruses in several animal species. I think the most commonly known is ORF virus in sheep, which causes these lesions in the mucous membranes and in the mouth area mainly. And that's also a really well-known zoonosis. So people can get infected from this sick sheep. And in people, the clinical symptoms are mainly these vesicles on the fingers. There are also other known parapox viruses in animals, and most of these parapox viruses are zoonotic. And we also have suspicion that this equine parapox virus that we have found from Finland causing epidemics, that it is probably also zoonotic. However, we still have not been able to confirm it.
Mm. And what other animals besides the sheep? Because I think a lot of us remember ORF virus specifically, but what other animals do we usually recognize parapox virus in? Because horses are pretty exotic still, but there are other animal species that they're more common in, right?
Yes, also in cows there is this pseudo cowpox virus that causes other lesions, and then also very similar skin symptoms in people than ORF virus does.
Yeah. And what typical signs should we look for if we should suspect parapox virus?
So in general, these parapox viruses are causing symptoms on a skin or a mucous membranes. And they normally need a skin cut or a little bit of damaged skin to be able to cause the disease. So in general, it's thought that a healthy skin will give you protection of these viruses. So typically they start with the vesicular lesions, and then later on they start to be these pustular and excreting lesions. But the typical parapox virus lesion is vesicle in the beginning.
And how does it progress, the disease in these animals having vesicles in? I believe it's mostly around the mouth, but you can see them in other places, I remember.
Yes, I believe in sheep, typically around the mouth and also in the other area. But, well, I'm more familiar with these lesions in horses. Mm. And in horses, so far, we've just mainly seen them in the pastern area. However, in this winter, we were able to detect the virus in one horse that had this skin symptoms also in this axillary area, in the area where the harness belt attaches. First, we thought it looked a little bit like a fungal dermatitis, but then, well, it could have been the combination of a fungal and the equine parapox virus. But however, the PCR showed us that the parapox virus was also there in the harness belt area.
So how could you explain, how did it look on the horses, these symptoms that you found just now for the recent cases that you've seen in Finland?
Well, they look quite typical. First, they start in this vesicle-type lesions, but I think often people don't recognize those because they are under the hair and everything, and in the pastern area. And then they start to open and come to these erosive, scabby lesions. And then sometimes if the secondary bacteria step in, then obviously they can be very exudative and swollen the feet, the legs.
Okay, and what other, because that description could be a lot of things, I guess, if a practitioner saw these lesions, for instance, in Sweden, we could think of other things. So there are a lot of other things. Are there anything particular with these lesions, or is it very like the other types of pastern dermatitis that we see? Or is it really very close in resemblance to other known dermatitises in that area?
Well, I guess when you haven't seen it before, you can easily confuse it with like typical mud fever, for example. But for this parapox dermatitis, it seems that we have the cases mainly during the winter time. So when it's not that muddy in the paddocks, so the time is a bit different. And then it's compared to the typical mud fever, the parapox virus infection is often more aggressive. It comes very fast, but then the horse can be lame. Quite often they are even lame because they are so painful. But then they also start recovering. If there is no secondary bacteria infection, they recover within 2 weeks normally.
Okay. And is it a single leg or all four or mainly the hind legs or?
Quite often it seems to be single leg. It can be many, but I'd say that most often it's only a single leg. I cannot really say if it's front or rear legs. It could be either ones.
Okay, so you should look at it as a dry pastern dermatitis, or is it exudative, or how does it look?
Well, it gets pretty exudative from the beginning. Like in the beginning, it starts with this vesicle-type lesions, but then they break and it gets its scabby or exudative lesions.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, in Finland, you have had this disease for a while now, and it all started back in 2013 with a case that has been described in the literature. What happened in that case, if you remember? How would you describe that case? Because it seems to have been a little bit worse, and the horse actually ended up being euthanized, as far as I remember. But can you tell us a little bit about how that index case occurred?
Yes, well, it's quite different, the first case. It was a severely sick 2-year-old trotter that was euthanized, and then this parapox virus was found from the legs of the horse. But it was only this one individual case. It was a horse of, I'd say, around close to 20 horses in the same stable, and they didn't find symptoms in any other horses. So it was only this one individual horse, and the parapox virus was found from it after euthanasia. But then later on, 2014, 2015, people, the grooms of the trotters and the trainers, reported this really nasty pastern dermatitis. So it was 2014 to 2015. Then again, 18 to 19. But no samples were taken. We didn't know what it was. But then in 2021 to 22, again during the winter, these symptoms started to show again in the trotters, and a lot of horses got sick. And then we were prepared and we started taking samples. And in that epidemic, we found equine parapox virus from many horses that we sampled. And then we could see the clear association of this virus and the epidemic. And then for some reason, it seems that the outbreak comes in every 3 years. So for this winter, we were expecting to have another outbreak because it's 3 years since the previous one. But it got already until February until we found about the first cases of this outbreak. So we were kind of already thinking we were wrong and we don't get the epidemic this year. But then in February, we got the first horses that got sick, and we got sampled, and equine parapox virus was found again. We've also looked the serological samples back until 2012, and we've found the antibodies against equine parapox virus from the Finnish serological samples since that year. So we know for sure that the virus has been around over 10 years.
And do you have any cases of this acting as a zoonosis? Have any of the humans been infected with this virus as far as you know?
Well, this is a very interesting question. We have some evidence that this is zoonotic, but so far we have not been able to confirm it. We made this questionnaire study in 21 to 22 and found out that grooms at the stables that were treating sick horses had more skin symptoms than grooms at the stables where only healthy horses were boarded. So this is one evidence. And also, people say that it is zoonotic. We know the trainers say it is zoonotic because people have got sick, but we haven't got samples from those people, except serological sample from a groom that got skin symptoms after treating a sick horse. However, we could not show that positive. Maybe it was not, the titer was not high enough for our detection method to show it, or maybe the person was not serologically positive. We detected parapox virus from a wound from a groom. He had a wound that was healing really slowly, and he'd been treating sick horses, and the virus was detected by PCR from that wound. However, We don't know if it was a contamination from the horses or if it was really living in that wound. Mm. So we still need to confirm the zoonotic potential, the zoonotic nature of this virus.
Yeah.
But I have a strong suspicion it is zoonotic.
And the skin lesions that these humans had, how would you describe those if you could?
Well, I've seen a photo of some vesicle type lesions, but then also like little wounds. So we have very little data about those skin lesions of people yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So and now we have a good picture of how these horses look. They have this either crustaceous dermatitis or vesicular dermatitis in one leg, usually not a lot of legs, and they can be pretty lame on that leg. And then you mentioned you had seen them in the area of the girth as well, with that case that you mentioned. Anywhere else? Because it seemed a little bit odd that it does not seem to appear around the mouth in horses.
No, so far we haven't found it around the mouth. We had one case that had some mouth lesions, but PCR was negative.
Okay.
But what is interesting, we've been looking at these environmental samples now to find out where the virus stays or how well it stays in the environment. As we know that ORF virus is very resistant in the environment. It can stay years and years in the environment. So now we've looked for equine parapox virus from the stable environment, and we found that in one box, in the wall of the box, we could find the virus, like, let's say, 1 meter, 20 centimeters, 1.5 meter high. So that makes us think maybe it is in a mucous membranes or in the nose or somewhere, because it was on that level on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, here it can be also from the contamination from the groom. The groom has been touching the legs of the horse and then leaning against the wall or whatever.
Yeah.
But there are some interesting things.
For sure. So if we do see a horse, I'm a veterinarian, I'm standing in front of a horse and I have this suspicion, what type of sampling should I perform and where should I send it to?
Well, you shall take a skin swab and then send that to a PCR. And I know that SVA is doing it commercially, so you can send the sample to the SVA for analysis of equine parapox virus. However, if there is a larger epidemic or many horses getting sick, obviously us in Finland, when we are doing the research, we would be interested in this case, and we have some research money also to analyze samples for you, both the skin swabs and then also serological samples.
And I know that sometimes as a clinician, when you do skin swabs, you always think about how to do the swabs. And is it that if you have a lot of crusts on the lesions, do you need to peel them off and swab underneath? Do you need to take the crusts off and send that as well? Or is there anything specific about swabbing that you want to tell the listeners?
Well, according to my experience, it seems that when the disease is active, there is a lot of virus. So I think if you just get the swab to the lesion and turn it around there a bit, you'll most likely find the virus.
Okay.
Very good. Maybe to get a little bit under the scab or whatever, but to me it seems it's quite easy to get the virus to the swab when the disease is active.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very interesting.
And don't clean it. Don't clean it beforehand. Just get it from the lesion as it is.
Right, right.
Also, serum samples are interesting for us.
Okay.
We can detect the antibodies also.
Do you know anything about how long it takes before they seroconvert?
This is an interesting question as well. We've looked at that a little bit, and actually we were surprised that they seroconverted quite rapidly. I remember it was not many days that they were already seropositive. And also very interestingly, we had two horses that we took the samples when they had acute phase. They were antibody positive. And then also 1 year later, they were still antibody positive. And I think this explains also why we have this 3 year, we seem to have the 3 year period between the outbreaks. Probably it gives quite long protection. And it's quite interesting also because parapox virus is a skin virus and it's not often thought to have a very, I mean, it's a local infection. So it's quite interesting that the antibody response is so still strong.
Yeah. Well, I guess in some of the other parapox viruses, they do have a viremic phase as well. And so do we have any potential of having latent carriers of this virus? Is that a theory that you guys are working on? Or if they harvest the virus in some of the lymphatic tissues? Or
well, I suppose that is a possibility, but we haven't looked at that yet. But what we have now so far looked, we've looked the environmental samples, but then also we've taken rodent samples. So one idea was that maybe rodents in the stables could be the reservoir of this virus. But so far, the rodent samples that we've checked, not that many yet, I'd say between 10 and 20, have been negative.
Okay. Okay, how much do we know about the spread? We talked about the fact that you found it on the box doors. Do we know anything about how this virus is spreading across the barn? And on that note, when you have an outbreak, how many of the horses will actually show the symptoms? Is it just one in the whole barn? Is that usual? Or is it the entire barn that gets affected?
Well, the typical story with this disease is that so far that the horse goes to the racetrack racing. Then 2 or 3 days later, he starts with the skin symptoms. So it seems that the incubation period is quite short. And then somewhere there at the racetrack environment, the virus probably is. Is it on the surface of the track? Maybe, because first we thought it might be in the washing boxes. But I've took samples from the washing boxes from the racetrack, didn't find the virus. And then if it's like the ORF virus, it is more happy in the dry places than in the wet places. So I think it might be in the track surface. And when the horse is running there, it easily gets some small cuts on the skin. And this gives the route to the virus to enter. Then what has happened also, that within the stable, horses that are in the same paddock can get infected. So it's transmitted in the paddock. It seems also that if you put the horse that is infected, if you put another horse to the infected horse's box, the other horse can get it from there. So somehow, well, it makes sense that the virus is there where the feet are. And it can find a way then to a next horse.
Do we know if it's from horse to environment to horse, or it's directly from horse to horse? Or I guess nobody has done any experimental infections with this virus yet.
No, obviously it's through environment. That's for sure, it seems. But then I guess it could easily go also from horse to horse.
Yeah.
But I mean, here we don't know. We still need a lot of research on epidemiology of this virus.
Yeah. And you mentioned that it's usually, up until now, it's been usually the racehorses going to the track and coming back. Do you have any cases where it's not racehorses, or has it all been racehorse related?
Well, it has so far, what we've found out, it's always been racehorse related. Mm-hmm. It's been in the stables where the racehorses are kept.
Okay.
But I mean, obviously horses are horses. So, I mean, I don't see no reason why it couldn't infect riding horses, but maybe the management and the environment are favorable for the virus on the trotting side at this moment.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something to keep an eye on, that if you do have a pasture dermatitis in a non-racehorse, maybe starting to test them could be an interesting idea to start thinking like
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, and it seems that it always comes during the winter months.
Okay.
So for some reason, it's more seems to be more happy in the wintertime than in the summertime.
Yeah, so now in our Scandinavian countries, the wintertime can mean a lot of different things. In Denmark, for instance, it could be quite wet in the pasture with a lot of mud. So when you say wintertime in Finland, is that dry and cold, or what type of environment would that be?
It seems dry and cold, and the epidemics, well, have been like starting November going on until end of March.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are some wet periods in this country during those times as well.
Right. So a lot would be similar to Sweden, the northern part of Sweden and Norway, and maybe a little bit more wet in the southern parts of Sweden and Norway as well. So excellent. So now we've kind of identified the dermatitis case, what to look out for, seasonality, how to diagnose it. So how do we treat it?
The most important thing is try to prevent secondary bacterial infections, because this is a viral disease and it takes its 2 weeks to horse to recover in general, unless the secondary bacteria hit in. So just the basic, keep it clean and use maybe some, well, nowadays we try to avoid antibiotics in general, but there are many other type of products that can prevent the bacterial growth. And then what is important, if these horses are painful, like they often are, use painkillers, use non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. It was quite sad in our questionnaire study when we were asking people what kind of treatment do you use. Very rarely they used non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which is from the animal welfare point of view, it's important.
Yeah. So we don't have any antiviral creams or anything that we should start using. It seems to be the body's immunity that needs to take care of it.
At least we don't have any experience of using any antiviral products for this disease.
Okay, good, good. And is it complete resolution within 2 weeks, or is it that you can start seeing improvement in 2 weeks and then it takes longer before the skin lesions are completely healed? Or how long does it take?
Well, generally they are back to training and their normal life within 2 weeks. However, sometimes there are these nasty hoof lesions as well. And I think the hoof lesions are related to the fact that if the leg is really swollen, so then the hoof gets damaged as well. Uh-huh. And obviously for that hoof lesion to grow out will take months and months.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, so let's talk a little bit about why it is that this disease has only been found in Finland so far. What are the risks that we have this parapox virus in the other countries at this point? We just don't know.
Well, from my opinion, I think that it is probably not diagnosed yet in other countries. I'd say it is probably elsewhere also. However, it could be that our environment here in Finland is more favorable to that virus than in other countries. It was interesting, this serological study that we did on this like archived samples. We could see the antibodies in trotters and also in riding horses here in Finland, but none of the exported horses had antibodies. So that shows a bit that it is maybe been mainly our disease so far.
So you know of studies where they looked at antibody levels in other countries in Europe, or
no?
No, not yet.
No, I don't. What we did, we looked at our food authorities samples. This is actually to be published, this study, but we looked the archived samples that we had from 2012, and we had some imported horses in those samples, and they were all negative.
Okay.
The imported ones.
Okay, and do you know of any other countries that has confirmed parapox virus except for Finland, and then I guess one in the States, United States, long time ago? Or
yes, in the States they confirmed equine parapox virus in I think two people that had been treating horses. And that case was over 10 years ago.
Okay.
I believe it was before the one that we found in 2013 or around the same time.
Yeah.
I was curious about the management, because this seems to, as you say, that it infects through the environment, most likely. What is your recommendation to stables where you can find this virus regarding the management of not spreading it further?
Well, the hygiene, obviously, that keep the horses that go to the races, keep them in their own boxes. Watch out for the first days after the race very carefully, the skin, if there are any lesions. And don't put any other horses to the boxes of the sick horses. Also, same goes for the paddocks. And, well, the preventive thing is try to keep the skin of the horse very healthy. It's not that easily done than said, but the healthy skin protects from this virus. And I would like to emphasize, when treating with these sick horses, it's very important for the grooms to take care of their own hand hygiene. First of all, to protect themselves, but also to make sure that they don't transmit the disease from one horse to the next one. So always, when treating these horses with the skin lesions, use the gloves. Mm. That is very important.
Initially, we talked about the index case, the first horse that you found with this virus, and you mentioned it was euthanized. Was it euthanized due to the viral infection that got severe consequences, or was it euthanized due to something else and then you sort of accidentally found the virus?
Yes, it was euthanized for something else, and it was kind of a side finding than this virus at that point.
Okay, because I was thinking about the bacteriological infections that you mentioned could be a consequence of the viral infection, and what can be the consequence of this? Because I can imagine it can be much more severe than the virological infection.
Well, we've seen some horses with a secondary bacterial infection with a really high fever and very sick, very swollen legs. And also we've found zoonotic bacteria from these lesions.
Okay, so really a good reason why you would want to keep the viral infection away. How common would you say that is, that you get a bacterial infection?
Well, this is hard to say, because we haven't really looked at that on a big number of horses. But from our questionnaire study that we did, and we asked, how do you treat these horses? A lot of people used antibiotics, either locally or some even systematically. And I don't believe that it is that the secondary bacterial infections are so big thing that one should in general use antibiotics for the treatment.
Mm.
So I'd avoid the antibiotics as far as the secondary bacterial infection is confirmed.
Mm. I think that's a very good point, because we have to remember that what needs to be protected is the normal skin flora on that delicate skin, and every time we use antibiotics we also destroy the normal flora of the skin, and that can make everything delayed in healing processes once we get that disrupted. So very good point. One last question, Katja, because this is a viral infection, so can't we just vaccinate for this?
Very good question, and this is hopefully the future that we can make a vaccine against it. I think the vaccine would probably work well because it seems that at least the disease gives a pretty long protection, so maybe the vaccine would do that as well.
But I guess we need to learn more about the epidemiology and how things spread. So maybe we can avoid vaccination if we can keep it under control with hygienic. But it would be nice, as always, to have a vaccine if it gets out of control for targeted vaccination of these cases.
Yes, and obviously this is an economically important disease. Like in these epidemics, hundreds of horses got sick, and then they are out of training, out of racing for at least 2 weeks. So that is expensive. And actually, you asked earlier, but I don't remember if I responded when you asked how many horses normally get sick when the virus comes to a stable. And it was in that epidemic 21 to 22, according to the questionnaire to study, about 1/3 of the horses of a stable got sick. So it was quite infectious. However, this winter, I had more, people were telling more about the cases that only a few horses in one stable got sick. So maybe there were still some protection from the earlier epidemic. I don't know, but I'd say if it's a naive population, a lot of horses will get sick.
And how many sick horses did you get knowledge of this winter? Are there still active sick horses, or is it fading away now that we turned into the spring and summer months?
Well, it's the last sick ones that I was I'm aware of were in end of March, beginning of April, and it seems to me that this epidemic, people have not been that active in sampling or contacting us, because I think now they kind of think, okay, we know the disease and this is what happens. Now the horses get sick and then in 2-3 weeks they get well again. So I think the excitement about the disease has gone down a bit.
But that's, I guess, because of your job as communicating what the disease is. So I guess that's also a positive thing, that they know what they're dealing with, but you still need the information to continue the research, I guess, is a good point. So
if you are a veterinarian in the other Scandinavian countries, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and you stand there with a case of mud fever in the winter or something that would maybe make you suspicious, what is your recommendation, Katja? That is it that we always do the PCR for this virus, or would there be situations where you would be more keen on doing it than other? Would you recommend your colleagues in the other Scandinavian countries to go ahead and test when they see these skin issues?
Well, my advice would be that take a sample if there are several horses sick at the same time and acutely. If there is just one individual here and there, then it is not, most likely it's not this virus. So typically many horses get sick around the same time. And then another thing, if it's a chronic thing, if the owner is complaining, well, this had this skin lesions for a long time and we've tried everything and no, we have not found the diagnosis and no treatment is working. These are not the cases of equine parapox virus, most likely not. So chronic cases, I don't think it's useful to take a sample or just individual cases.
But more the acute ones that just flare up and then you have several horses with the same symptoms, then it would be a good idea too.
Yes, exactly. Or maybe a new horse that has been racing very recently or something like that. Then in that case, an individual would be interesting as well.
Well, thank you very much, Katja. I think this has been very helpful, and I'm sure that it has opened the eyes and ears of a lot of veterinarians treating these horses with the lower limb dermatitis cases, because that is one of the problems that occurs everywhere in the Scandinavian countries and something that the veterinarians are called to have an opinion on. So this is just an additional thing to think of in case you see lesions corresponding what you just mentioned there.
It was a pleasure. I was very happy to have an opportunity to do this because it's important to get this information out.
It's very good that we found out. Thank you.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til Hestedyllerne. Hvis du kan lide det du hører, så læg en anmeldelse i din podcast app og glem ikke at fortælle dine kolleger om podcasten. Vi er snart tilbage med et nyt spændende afsnit af Hestedyllerne.